WBSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Welcome back in hour number three of the program here on Monday morning. And we're going to be speaking with New Bedford City Council President Shane Berger. But before that, just want to let you know we're going to have a new contest for you up later on today. I don't have it up there yet. I didn't get a chance to get it posted last night, but I'll have it up later on in the day. All this week long, we were giving away tickets to see the B-52s and Devo at Xfinity Center on October 2nd. It's brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits, the home of the Purple Dot, where you can try before you buy. But B-52s and Devo, kind of one last hurrah for Xfinity Center for this season, because after that, it's just, I think, too cold for people to sit outside for a concert all night. But come on, that's going to be a warmed-up night when it comes to those two groups. I'm sure many of you out there are B-52s fans. Devo is kind of more of a niche audience, but you get to see both bands if you are the winner, and it should be a great show. So we are joined by New Bedford City Council President Shane Berger. I don't know if you're a B-52s fan or a Devo fan, but...
Great musicians.
That's his way of saying, like, I don't know anything. I'm too young to know those bands. Sometimes I do forget that you are the age that you are, so... I don't mean that as an insulting way. So there's a lot that's been going on this week. I think the big story of the week is, and something that I know that the council was heavily involved in, that's the decision by the Board of Health not to approve the Parallel Products / South Coast Renewables project that was planned for the North End. So is this a big win for the people of New Bedford, or is this just one step in what's going to be an ongoing thing?
Oh, well, I definitely want to recognize the wins along the way, but I am also realistic in the fact that I do believe it's not over. Unfortunately, it's a situation where I think at this point the company has put a lot of money into this venture. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they filed an appeal. Obviously, it's our hope and our desire that they let it rest. But it sounds everything's pointing to them really trying to push for this to still go through. But as we saw, the community that came out to really say, no, not here, not in my backyard, obviously, is the really the NIMBYism is the attack that was used. But essentially, it's not really just a not in my backyard attitude. It's really not in my city attitude. I think one of the points that I try to stress when I spoke at the public hearing was that although obviously Ward 1 would have a direct effect in their surrounding area, it would have wide-reaching effects throughout New Bedford, but also our abutting towns. So I think even, to my colleague from Ward 1, connecting with other municipalities to make them aware of it and now getting them involved, just because we know that there potentially will be a bigger fight ahead. Again, our hope and desire is that this company will see that this is not the right place or location for this particular business. But I believe that we will continue to be victorious because of the fact that this isn't just a situation of, oh, we don't like this. All of the points that were brought up during the Board of Health public hearing about the environmental concerns, the health risks, the list goes on and on. They are serious, and I'm glad to know that our particular Board of Health paid attention to that. And this is why it's important that we have people on the Board of Health that are from our community that understand the risk and understand what's going on here in New Bedford.
Yeah, I mean, I think a NIMBY argument comes about when it's something that, the questions that they had, if they were answered satisfactorily and people still were against it, that's what I would see a NIMBY thing. I think what you saw here was that you had a company that just didn't have the answers mm-hmm. to some of these issues, and that left too many lingering questions. If those questions were all answered satisfactorily, maybe there was a way that some people would have, not everybody, obviously the people that live in the immediate area wouldn't have changed their mind, but maybe other people in the city might have said, you know what, we do need this down the line, and we're not going to let these people in this neighborhood stand in the way of progress for everybody else. But that wasn't the case. It was everybody had these concerns because these questions just weren't being addressed, especially in the wake of what happened with E.L. Harvey. It just showed how quickly things can go wrong with a situation like this.
Oh, of course. And I, you know, again, I think that is the biggest point that I want to stress here. And I'm glad that you reiterated that. I think that's the point I was trying to get across, is that this is not just a situation of, you know, I just don't like this. I think that not only did, the different neighborhood groups that came together, South Coast Neighbors United, and all the other different acronyms that are escaping me right now. I think CAPPP was one, but you know, the two champions that come to mind obviously are Wendy Morrill and Tracy Wallace, that really helped. I think some people, it's lost on them that this has been a 6-year fight for them that they have been working on. And for some people, they're just joining this fight maybe 6 months ago, but they've been doing this for 6 years. So for them, this is, I think, a bit of a relief for them. But I think they also are very realistic of the fact that although they've put all of this work and time into researching and showcasing the real serious concerns beyond just, I don't like this, I'm glad that they're having kind of a respite moment here where they're saying, okay, well, let's rest for the potential fight ahead.
And as you said, this may be a fight. Do you feel confident that the city is united in this fight? Because there's been some concern about, the mayor's stance in some people's minds is kind of flip-flopped on this a little bit.
Well, again, I'm not in a position to defend the mayor in any case. But, what I will say is I just believe that the mayor in this scenario is potentially just trying to have the best case scenario. I think he was looking forward to, if it didn't go our way, and our way, I mean the community's way, he wanted to try to find the best outcome for the community. I want to remind people that previously, before the host community agreement, there was the solid waste, basically people's...
Bio waste.
Yeah, bio waste. I was like, how do I say this polite on the radio? And that was something that they were able to make sure was definitely off the table as a part of that agreement. I'm not really sure why now that, it's my understanding that now that the Board of Health has voted and this final step has taken place that he doesn't necessarily have to stick to this host agreement. I'm not sure how true that is, but I'm being told that, now he doesn't necessarily have to stick to this whole being silent feature of it. But I'm hoping that we do have his support behind, noting that this does not have to take place here in New Bedford. But I do think that his original thought process was, well, let me try to get the best case scenario, whether it's a yes vote or a no vote for our community. And I think that's the similar thought process behind potentially the vote. Some people have been criticizing the one Board of Health vote that voted no, but I think she really did a great job of explaining herself of why she was concerned that if they voted no of the site suitability, that if it were to be appealed, that she's explained in the past that things that have been overturned, if the Board of Health doesn't put in stipulations, that it just gets to go right through without any fixes.
And they'd lose some oversight of it.
Yeah, so I think that was... unfair that some people are kind of criticizing that vote. So I hope some people are really at least looking at the heart behind some of the decisions and votes that have been taking place and realizing that there has been a lot of time, sweat, and tears, I would say, that have gone into the decisions that have been made throughout this whole process. Again, this 6-year-long process.
And to your point earlier, it shows that we hear a lot of phone calls from people who just say, well, there's nothing you can do about anything. It's going to happen anyway. They want it, it's going to happen. And it just goes to show that if you don't want something to happen, if you organize a group and you put in the effort and you put in the time, and yeah, it's going to take work, but that the citizens can come together and they can dictate what goes on in their community.
Yeah, I think it's Margaret Mead, one of my favorite quotes is, it's, you know, never doubt that a small group of people can really make a difference, because in fact, it's always has been that small group of people that have been the ones that rise up to really change the course of the world.
And so, you know, if there's something you're passionate about, organize, get folks on your side and put the work into it. And so now, as you said, you know, this isn't going to necessarily end here. How will we know where it's going to go? Is there going to be any conversations with the company, or are you just expecting to get slapped with a, you know, a legal appeal to this?
Well, it would go through the Board of Health, because essentially it'd be a challenge to the Board of Health's decision. It's my understanding that the Board of Health would then need to the funding through the council to then have the legal defense to uphold their decision. And I, speaking for myself, and I would hope for the full council who has been in support of this all along, I would hope that support remains and that they would support funding that legal defense to uphold this decision. I know that also there's been discussions of trying to make sure that moving forward that there is a further oversight over with the legislative branches involved in regards to these kind of wide-reaching decisions that will have a growing effect on the greater New Bedford community, because as I keep emphasizing that although this happened to be in one focus area in Ward 1, it would have wide-reaching effects throughout the entire greater New Bedford area. And I'm intentional in saying greater New Bedford because I keep pointing out the fact that this would not just only affect the residents of New Bedford, but even the abutting towns.
And speaking of legal action, I know you were waiting to get the funding to be able to move forward with the question about the police chief hiring and getting a decision on that. Where does that stand on moving that forward?
That was officially filed on Friday. So I believe the parties involved will be served at some point this week.
And then we'll just see where it goes from there.
Yeah.
Is that something you might know a little bit more about this? Is that something that would have to be handled by a judge? Would that be something a magistrate would handle? How would that happen? That,
you know, to be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure on which authority within the judicial branch would render that decision. But I'm hoping that it isn't one that we would be waiting a long time for. But I guess it just depends on where in the docket it would come up. But yeah, as soon as we hear back in terms of, I'll be in communication with our attorney, David Garatowski, on the progress with that and on when we would potentially hear a rendering in the timeline. And hopefully we'll hear back on whatever determination comes from the courts.
And I would assume you kind of envision this being something that the lawyers handle. Mm-hmm. That this isn't something where we're expecting to see, you know, you have to testify and Mayor Mitchell have to testify.
Correct. And I think this is one of those things that I kept stressing to people that, you know, would ask me questions about it and worrying about taxpayers' dollars being wasted. And even talking about the court filing fee, I think it was, you know, a little over $200 that was spent for the filing fee, just so people understand how, you know, how much this costs the taxpayers. Again, you know, not to dismiss that cost, because $200 is $200. But, you know, for some people, I think they were envisioning this was going to cost thousands of dollars to the taxpayers and it was going to put us in a crazy amount of debt. It's $200. And it's, I think for me, and I think for many people, it's very important for us to really get clarification on this.
And paying lawyers who already work for you anyway.
Well, and I think that's the other point I kept stressing to individuals is these are salaried lawyers that are going to be paid whether or not this case was filed or not. I think the question one of my colleagues asked to our attorney was if for some reason, for example, the administration decides to make a bigger deal out of it, again, all we're seeking for is clarification of the city charter that we obviously have a disagreement about that we're reading differently. And so as long as, you know, the administration doesn't decide to prolong this by saying, oh, I'm going to, you know, bring in this expert witness, or I'm going to do this, or I, you know, we're going to hire outside counsel, or we're going to do, you know, I don't understand why the administration would go through such great lengths to try to stop this counsel or the legislative council, you know, branch of government from reviewing their amazing selection. I think that's why it's so mystifying that someone who reports to have a transparent process and everything straightforward, why would you go through so many, you know, jumps and hoops to delay this, to just prevent the inevitable? That's what I think is just odd. But as long as the administration says, okay, fine, we think we have the best argument here, we know we're right, they are just, the way I've been explained that this will be presented is our legislative council has already, as they filed this, presented our arguments and our documentation. The administration will get their opportunity to present their documentation. Someone will then read it and interpret it and then submit a report. And then that will be it. It won't be one of those televised O.J. Simpson-esque trials that will go on for weeks or months.
Right. Court TV is not going to cover this.
Yeah. It's not going to take away hours and hours. I would hope that it wouldn't take hours and hours from our solicitor's office because, you know, as I've just explained, they apparently have longstanding precedents that they are citing and that they know, and they've already prepared all of this because this has been going on for years that they know of. And based on the response from Solicitor Jakes that I think you've put in your article, that you've embedded in your article, two past solicitors have already written on this. So they should be able to already have this pulled. But that's the only foreseeable expense from the city side, is if the mayor intends on prolonging something that doesn't need to be prolonged.
And I did take a call a little while back where someone said that this is the mayor taking it personally because the council is challenging him. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, because if you are Mayor Mitchell, you're thinking to yourself, I mean, how much longer is he going to be the mayor of New Bedford? And if that's the case, you're hoping that this guy that you hired is going to be your chief for a long time. So, you know, he's probably hoping, I don't ever have to hire another chief again as long as I'm mayor. So it doesn't really work into it being a personal Mayor Mitchell thing. And it just comes into that position versus the council position.
Well, but I think if anything, that speaks more so to that caller's point of, if it really is not something that's going to come up again, why not just say, okay, you know, I keep bringing up this point about Mayor Lang. He had literally the exact same thing happen to him. And he holds the exact same philosophy that, oh, no, we don't have, he has the same interpretation of the law that it doesn't have to go before the council. But again, Mayor Lang, because he doesn't think that it's that big of a deal, and he knows his pick at the time was Dave Preventure. Great guy. I have the best candidate here. I have nothing to hide. I'll just send it down to the council, because that's how we do appointments here. The council doesn't call for confirmations. I send down an appointee, they screen them, and they vote to confirm. And so Mayor Lang said, "Hey, no big deal. I don't have an ego, so I'm just going to send it down. No big," and it was all done. Bada bing, bada boom, passed unanimously. But this guy who you're explaining, you know, might not be here that long, or doesn't really have might be the last chief that he appoints. Then why not just do the same thing Mayor Lang did? Why not just say, hey, it's not that big of a deal, I'll just send down the appointment. Instead, he's doing all this theatrical things of, I'm going to send a letter, I'm going to come on the radio and have the host keep asking me the same question about a mysterious confirmation hearing that will never happen because I haven't sent down the appointment. And I know it's not going to happen because I know that's not the process of how government works. But I know that the host is never going to push me on that. So I'm just going to keep having him ask me that same stupid question. And then I'm going to cry and say, oh, the council president keeps calling me names. I'm not calling you any names. I'm just stating the fact that you're lying and misleading the public, and then you'll continue to go on and lie and then cry that I'm saying you're lying. And then it's just the circle effect going on and on.
Well, and in that same vein, it's also been suggested that if some of the counselors were very vocal in their support for the internal candidate that was in the running for that position. Yeah. And so there's the idea that had that person been the one selected, the council wouldn't have cared and we wouldn't be dealing with this issue.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I would still have cared. And then again, as I've said now, Jason Thodey, I have already vocally expressed to you and to other publications, I plan on voting to confirm him. So to that point, you know, I think I agree that like maybe some other colleagues who have voted to get the declaratory judgment might have, because they even spoke up. If you watched the council meeting, you know, I think Councillor Carney, for example.
Yes, that's
she's the one who came on the this station and mentioned, you know, Captain Rodriguez, we'll just say it, as one of the people that she wanted the internal candidate, as she kept mentioning the homegrown person. She's also one of the people who didn't even want to necessarily send this for a declaratory judgment. So I think I challenge that kind of thought process of, even if Nathaniel Rodriguez was selected, she'd still want to have him come through. I think even more so because of the point that we're bringing up, that I think Councillor Gomes and Councillor Morat has brought up, the fact that we should be bringing our police chief in, not only for a screening process and to introduce them to the public, but also to celebrate, oh, we have a new chief. Welcome to New Bedford. This is your council. We celebrate you. Now let's swear you in, because our city clerk, who swears everyone in, is happens to be here because he's our clerk of our city council. He'll swear you in. It'll be televised. And here we are, you know, we kill two ravens with one Simone, as I often joke.
I like that.
But so, you know, and I'm glad you brought up that point too about Captain Rodriguez, because again, to the mayor's thought process of us just being able to hold a confirmation hearing, a number of councillors before this process began offered a support letter for Captain Rodriguez. I think a supermajority of councillors signed on to a letter. So using the mayor's thought process, why don't we hold a confirmation hearing for Nathaniel Rodriguez? How chaotic would that be? And that's what the mayor would love for us to do, is have a confirmation hearing for, let's say, Captain Rodriguez. And we all vote to say, yep, we confirm Nathaniel Rodriguez as our new chief of police. And what would the mayor do in that scenario? Rightfully so, he would reject it. And that would make sense, because that's not how mayoral appointments work. Emphasis on mayoral appointments. The mayor has to send it down. Confirmations do not. This works all the way up from the state to the federal level. The governor, the president, they send down their appointments, mm-hmm. and then they get confirmed by the body. Whatever body it is that is reviewing, screening, and confirming. It would be chaotic and disruptive if that body that's screening and voting just took it upon themselves to say, oh, this is the candidate that we have decided to confirm based on whatever news article or whatever. No, that's not how it works. And so he would love for the public to think that's the way the process works, because then if we decide to pick or confirm someone that we call upon that he doesn't like, then it becomes chaotic. And then the news story is, the council is chaotic, the council in distress, and here comes the mayor to come save the day. That is what they look forward to.
All right, we do have a call on hold. I'm going to take that in a moment. I just got to get a break in. We'll skip over the news so that we can get this call in. But let me take this break. We'll be right back with Council President Burgo in just a few moments. All right, we are back with Council President Burgo, and we're going to be taking your calls, 508-996-0500. Excuse me. I also have another question about a legal thing that I'll ask you coming up too. But let's go to the phones. You are on with Council President Burgo.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I hope both of you are well. And thank you for your service.
Thank you.
My question is this. Just got news that the gas rates, they're asking for a hike of 13 to 17%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the commercial that played said that the electrical rates went up 25%. We also have water and sewer rates that are increased, and after this election the tax rate's going to be set and taxes are going to go up again. What is the council going to do to help the residents and taxpayers of New Bedford to stem this tide of rising costs, mm-hmm. across the city? You know, we're in a position where, you know, it's getting tougher and tougher to live in New Bedford. And we need leadership to help stop this.
And as councillors, I didn't mean to step on you there, but as councillors, there's always things that will be kind of outside your purview. Like, there's not much you can do about the electrical rates, for example, but you have to take that into account when you're making other decisions about how you're figuring out what it'll cost the taxpayers.
Yeah.
Right. At least it can be addressed and maybe a letter sent up to the DPU and to Healy and everything to say that, you know, what's going on. We're not getting a lot of help here. And with this tax rate that's going to be set, it should be set before the election, because year after year, taxes have been going up. We went from when John Mitchell started at $249 million budget to a $550 million present budget.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hurting everybody, small businesses, taxpayers, renters, because it all trickles down.
Sure. Yep. Let's get the council president's take on that.
So what I'll say to that is we hear, and I think we're seeing it now with the candidates that are running, a number of them are small business owners, and they're tired of it. I hear it all the time when we're knocking doors, when running for reelection. It's a challenge we face every budget time, trying to find where we can trim down. As you pointed out, there are fixed costs, even the electricity costs. I think this was one of the big fights that we recently had that, again, got kind of construed around electricity costs at the library in particular, where a lot of the costs, we know electricity costs have gone up, but for some reason our library in particular had higher costs than other departments. So we tried to reduce it there, just to kind of take a pause to say, well, until we can see the trajectory leading up into we set the tax rate, let's hold off, because we don't want to be in a situation where we're taxing residents before we know for sure that we need that money. And this is what we've been trying to do as a council for at least my tenure of the last 4 years, of not taxing residents for services that they're not receiving. For example, with the police department, when we don't have a full complement of police officers, yet you're, as a taxpayer in New Bedford, you're being taxed as though you have every single boot on the ground. So trying to find those areas in New Bedford where we can trim down the budget without costing those effective services. But no, I do hear, I don't know if the caller's
well,
still...
the only thing I worry about is this, Counselor.
Yes.
Is that we know John Mitchell next year, he's going to come back with another ask.
Mm-hmm.
And is our budget going to go up to $600 million?
Are we going to get another
tax hike? Because this, we've been the council's been a rubber stamp for over 10 years by letting these...
I would disagree with that. I think that we have worked very hard.
Hold on. Let him answer.
Yeah, I would say that we haven't been a rubber stamp. We've worked very hard to trim where we can, but even then we're faced with a lot of criticism when we do make those cuts. What we have
I say to you is that you say no, but the facts show we went from 249 to 550. That's a gain of over $300 million. And nobody wants to answer that or take responsibilities for it. It's just disheartening, because it's destroying the future of New Bedford.
All right. I'm just going to hold you there just for the interest of time. Thank you for the call.
What I will say to that caller, I do hear his frustration, and it's a common opinion I would say that is felt across New Bedford. Again, that increase has happened over more than a decade of time, but I would say at least I can speak for the last 4 years. There's a lot more that can be done on the council when you have a unified front, and I think you've seen that over the last 4 years. Again, at least during my tenure on the council, we've worked very well together. I know, again, it's sometimes reported out there that the council is dysfunctional, that we're not unified, but I think you can see during budget times, we work very well together, using our different expertises to really hone in on this budget, to see where we can make those cuts. And we've done really well to take a knife to those services that we can without affecting public safety, emergency management, our parks and beaches, all the things that make New Bedford, New Bedford, and making sure that we can still run an effective city and making sure that New Bedford's affordable, a place to live. But again, those criticisms by the caller are fair criticisms. I understand, as even I know one of the criticisms of me is I'm not a homeowner, so I can't ever understand what it feels like to be a taxpayer, but I do understand.
I'm not one, and I still advocate for them.
One of the stories I share of why I ran for office and why I advocate so heavily for housing is my grandmother, who, God bless her, will be 93 next month. She was a homeowner in New Bedford. She lost her home because of how difficult it is with the water rate, with the cost of oil and heat and all these different things. I understand, having that experience growing up in a home that we eventually foreclosed on, then now becoming a renter. These are things that in New Bedford, I think over 60% of New Bedford residents are renters because the cost of living is getting way out of control. So I want you to understand that our counselors understand that. And even, I think Counselor Gomes recently shared his experience of going out into different homeless encampments and hearing the stories from individuals that, a lot of times are, kind of dismissed as, oh, well, they have a drug addiction or some kind of alcoholism, and realizing, no, that's not always the case. Sometimes it's an elderly person. I think he mentioned one of the women, really reminded him of his own mother, and that she just, her Social Security check didn't go far enough, and now she's living on the street, and it broke his heart. And those are the kind of conversations and experiences that we're having as counselors, and this is why we're working as hard as we can to work with this administration to say, okay, well, what can we hold off on? And unfortunately, the disagreements we're having are over car leases and, little pet projects and things like that, when obviously having tough conversations like that with a caller where they're deciding over...
Yeah, I think a call like that, it's a good exercise to look at the budget since from say 2015 mm-hmm. and look at 2025 and compare those required services.
Yeah,
and then see where the change, and you'll see that there has been an increase in those costs just because things go up over time. But then you can see where some of that other stuff is. Just really quickly, because I got to take a break, yes. And we've got another call here. Two things. One, as a renter in the city of New Bedford, mm-hmm. I want to have somebody on the council who represents that side of things too. And also, this is going to sound like I'm a council apologist here a little bit, because this is the semantical argument that I've heard other councilors make. But you haven't raised the tax rate in recent years.
Technically, no. Yeah.
But the taxes have gone up because your property values have gone up. So that's the rate is the same. Your valuation goes up, so that means you're going to pay more.
Or in some cases, we've voted the rate down. The rate has gone down, but yeah. But of course, that whole thought process kind of doesn't hold water.
Right.
Because in most people's mind, well, my bill's going up,
right.
And that's all they care about, which I totally get that. I would never waste my time explaining that thought process of, oh, we actually lowered taxes. The rate has gone down, but it's like, well, no, my value's gone up, so I'm paying more.
Yeah,
but
we went through that, I think it was last year, where the rate went down, and they were like, no, they raised the tax. Like, well, no, they didn't.
Yeah.
Your home is worth more, but anyway, let me get this break in. When we come back, I got to ask the council president a question, and then we'll take this call. We'll be right back. All right, that's all the breaks we're going to take, so we're going to finish things off the last 10 minutes here with the council president. Before we take this phone call, I just want to ask you, so the decision we found out about this week with the open meeting law violation, you had mentioned that there's already been some things that have been put into place to kind of stop this. So basically, this came about from an email sent and a text message sent to all the counselors, in which the council argued there were no deliberations happening, just communications, and so therefore it doesn't violate the open meeting law. The attorney general's office felt differently. Mm-hmm. What are some of these safeguards that are being put in place, if you can discuss them?
Yeah, so essentially what has been happening in the past is just what took place, where a counselor would say, okay, I have this motion coming forward. I would like, if any colleague would like to co-sponsor. What we're doing now is, if a colleague would like anything co-sponsored, we're sending it directly to our clerks or our secretaries in our office, and then they will then be forwarding it to our colleagues. And that way, there isn't any situation where, for example, which took place, where our colleague sent it out and then kind of put a little explanation of why they were putting it out. And I think that's where the attorney general, if you read the explanation, said that was considered deliberation, because she put in the email her explanation behind it. And in that situation, even though there were no email replies back to her of people saying like, oh, okay, great. And this is why I support it. And
right.
And that, and I think that's where
even if somebody had said, I agree, that would have been enough to count as a deliberation.
Well, that's what I would have thought would be considered a deliberation, because you have two people discussing or within that 11 person body, but their determination that you read, which is why they're saying the open meeting law was broken, was all it takes is one person saying something to 11 of us. And that is why that email, when it was sent out, was considered deliberation. And then the same thing also regarding the text message, even though, again, our attorneys, that when they officially sent out the open meeting law, why we said we don't think it was a violation, was really just inquiring, well, who sent this to WBSM in this case, because obviously this was a motion that ended up not even being submitted. It was actually withdrawn, which is why there was the confusion behind it, because it was something that the maker of the motion decided, okay, well, you know, I decided I don't even want to go forward with this. And then it was ended up being reported on the news, and we're like, wait, what the heck? This was not even something that we were moving forward with. So then that text message went out. And so the thought process was, well, we're not discussing necessarily city business. It was more so just inquiring who leaked this email that technically isn't city business, because it's not something that was even filed. But I think the attorney general, the thought process behind their determination was, well, let's always just side on the air of caution of the general public. And so now the determination is just to put out the text message and email, which obviously, as I've shared with you, has already been put out in the article, has been put out on Facebook. So it really, again, as I've mentioned.
Right, but you still have to enter it into the record per the decision.
And that's something we'll do. And so we'll be meeting with David Garatowski about how to make sure we do it officially, so we meet the requirements that have been outlined by the Attorney General's office. Again, we have nothing to hide here. I believe that this was blown out of proportion. Again, it was a motion that was already withdrawn. And I think that's why it was reported, because it was seemed as though we were trying to hide something. There are motions that are sometimes offered that at first sight you think, oh, okay, like I want to do this. And then you say, never mind, I changed my mind. You're allowed to change your mind. You're allowed to withdraw motions. Sometimes people withdraw motions the day of the meeting. And that's the end of it. Oh. Obviously, this one was a little more dramatized, and that's why it became a bigger issue.
In this era of, especially knowing that there's people keeping an eye on your communications, mm-hmm. and those kind of things, and in this era of being able to instantly communicate with people pretty quickly, why not just play it safe and say, we're not going to send out mass group, like, don't even send out a group text that says Merry Christmas. Like, let's do it all on an individual basis.
Well, again, this is the process that we've always, that had always been followed even before I had joined the council, is because if we wanted someone to co-sponsor or to alert our colleagues of, hey, this is something that's being offered. And I think it's also a way of bringing down redundancy. I think we've seen it recently where, for example, someone offers a motion on a ballot question regarding something, and then there's a secondary motion that falls behind it that relates to that same issue. Oftentimes, colleagues are thinking under the same, you know, there's 11 of us. There's the same issues going on in New Bedford. Sometimes we have the same thought process. Of like, hey, we should file a motion on X, Y, and Z. That's why this process was originally in place, where it's like, hey, Councillor Burgo is putting forward this motion. If you'd like to join him in sponsoring this, you know, now we're doing it where let the office know that you would like to co-sponsor this so we can add your name as a co-sponsor. But originally the practice was, hey, I'm Shane Burgo. I'm offering this to the council as a option for this upcoming meeting if you'd like to sign on. And I think even in the determination by the Attorney General, they've explained that's fine. If we wanted to do that, the part that went over their open meeting law violation was that she further explained.
The explanation as to why.
Yeah.
Was just really quickly, because I want to get in this call,
yes.
But was the decision to stop going to the restaurants, did that have anything to do with concern about the open meeting law violations? Because I know that was downplayed
when
it happened.
That was just a preference. I think at the time that was Council President Morad's initiative that she wanted to do to bring councilors together and to help bring the businesses that, you know, bring attention to the different businesses that we have here in New Bedford. And then the new council president didn't want to continue that. It's a lot of work to organize that.
Right. Yeah. And it's a lot of schedules to get clear on the nights that you have off.
Correct. And then in different wards, and then to post those to make sure and to keep up with that. So,
all right, let's finish off with this phone call. You are on with the council president.
Tim, thanks for putting me up against the hard break, buddy.
Sorry.
This is where we're missing the point here. First of all, open meeting law is a paper tiger. They put you in a corner, you take a class, everybody moves on. But this, what really bothers me, and Barry Silvey, by the way, we've brought a lot of businesses to the table. My family, we've had the Manhattan Soda, Arruda's Package, Silvey's Package, the pub on North Front Street. And we bought that from Mr. Mulvey. And just like we did with Trio Liquors, we take businesses, we polish them up, and we turn around and maybe sell them. But what I think you're missing the point, counselor, is you're better off saving 20 businesses than trying to get 20 new businesses to come to this city. It's just not going to happen. So I disagree with that fact. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, Shane, since you become elected, say elected or city council president, we're looking for glimmers of hope, the business community in the city of New Bedford. And can you give us any glimmers of hope, like how's the city doing in terms of New Bedford sales tax that gets reported to the state? The city of New Bedford, I'm not looking to give you a homework assignment, Shane, but the city of New Bedford, are we reporting, how's our growth, our sales tax? Are we doing better? Do you have any idea or any sense of that? These are economic indicators for people that do want to invest money in the city. How are we doing in that respect, Shane?
I think New Bedford, again, is a city on the move. And by all accounts,
Shane, I'm looking for real numbers here. So the sales tax that gets reported to the state from the city of New Bedford, how are we doing? Are we producing? Are we selling more cars? What are we doing? And I guess the next question is, and maybe you are in the business of employment or unemployment. I don't even know what you really do, but you can explain this. Our unemployment for business owners like myself, or people that want to come here, how's the city's unemployment? Where are we? Is it moving in the right? We're looking for glimmers of hope here, Shane. Mm-hmm. And you got to, as council president, again, it's easier to save 20 businesses than to bring 20 new businesses into the city, because it's just not going to happen. So is our unemployment rate level, where are we? Is that something you can talk about if you don't know about the tax, the sales tax that gets reported to the state?
Yeah, I don't have the figures in front of me on regards to sales tax and those figures, but in regards to unemployment rates, I think that we are doing a lot better in regards to people being employed here in New Bedford, and then I'm hoping that those numbers will improve now, especially one of the big arguments I had when it came to South Coast Rail coming to New Bedford. The hope that we have is